This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
This is iFanboy Special Edition, Spider-Man Homecoming. Special edition iFanboy podcast on Spider-Man Homecoming. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Ron Richards.
Oh, the title just made sense to me. Oh, it just clicked. Oh, okay, I get it now. All right, cool. Hey, Connor.
Hey, Ron. We're here to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming, which is Sony's latest reboot of Spider-Man, but this time they've allowed Marvel along for the ride. So Spider-Man is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for the first time in a solo film. The first time since he appeared in Captain America Civil War last year?
Yes, last year.
And so we're talking about it. There'll be some spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, you might want to pause it and come back after. But before we get into the movie talk, I wonder if this is maybe cursed for iFanboy because you and I both had technical problems at our screenings.
Yeah, so very excited for Spider-Man Homecoming, right? It's always a great time, right? Yes. You know, I really enjoy Tom Holland in Civil War. I was really excited to see what they're going to do. I heard nothing but good things from people that work at Marvel as well as other, you know, other critics and, you know, folks like that who got to see advanced screenings. So I bought a ticket for Friday, opening day, afternoon. It's going to be great. I left super early. I took the subway down to Brooklyn. I go to the Alamo Draft House. I'm, you know, it's a New York viewing of Spider-Man. You know, it's his homecoming.
Right.
And I'm sitting through, what I love about Alamo is that they don't show a ton of trailers. They just show like the good ones, basically.
Right.
And so there was just a bizarre, odd, long number of trailers. I'm on trailer number 4. I'm like, man, there's a lot of trailers. Now, I had plans after the movie, right? So I'm on a tight schedule.
Right.
Halfway through the 4th trailer, fire alarm goes off, lights come up, projector turns off, and everyone's looking around, and then a speaker comes on. This is the fire marshal. It's okay. It's not a drill, but it's not a fire. Everything's all right. Go about your business. Another minute walks by and the Alamo person comes in and say, hey, we're so sorry. The fire alarm went off. It turns off all the projectors. We're booting all the projectors back up. It'll be up in like a minute or two. I'm looking at my watch and I'm like, if this movie doesn't start in the next minute, I have to leave.
I hate that feeling.
Yeah, and because I'm like, I have something that I cannot be late for. Like, I had a gig that I had to get to. And so I was like, waited a minute, no movie. I got up and I left. I went downstairs. Luckily, I went downstairs. I explained it. They gave me tickets for the next day, the next morning, Saturday morning at 9:30. And so I'm like, okay, great. I'll just, you know, it's fine. I made it home in time for the gig. I had a relaxing night. Got up early this morning. Got up at 8:00. Took my shower, got all ready. It's already 85 degrees in New York City. I go to the subway, and they're doing track work on the subway between Queens and Brooklyn. And the movie's supposed to start at 9:30. And so I literally left at 8:40. I left the house at 8:40. This is a 20-minute trip usually, right? I get to the Bedford stop. I get out, wait for the shuttle train to come. About 5 minutes goes by, get on the shuttle train. It's going maybe 2 miles an hour. And the movie starts at the Alamo says it starts at 9:30. Keep in mind, Alamo Drafthouse, if you're late, they will not let you in with no refund. Right.
Right.
But I knew from yesterday that there were at least 4 trailers. So I knew I had at least 10 minute padding. Right.
Right.
I got off the subway at 9:34, ran in the 85 degree heat to the theater, 2.5 blocks to the theater, up the elevator, up the escalator. I sit down in my seat at the end of the last trailer. I text my girlfriend that I made it. As soon as I send that text, I get the Alamo. This is, you know, do not text, do not talk, do not be late. This is a, you know, like their warning. I just made it, but just at the in the nick of time.
Well, mine is not as dramatic. Yeah, you've earned this. Mine is not as dramatic, but I similarly to you, I ran out early Friday to see it around 3 o'clock. I had finished everything I needed to do for the day at work, and I was like, "Well, there's a screening literally right next door at 3:45, 20 minutes." So I ran over there and got a ticket and sat down. This was an AMC, not an ideal viewing scenario, but it was right next door and it was 3 o'clock, and I figured that would be okay.
Convenience, it's fine.
Yeah, and so you know, AMC shows all the trailers that are out, like every trailer on the Apple app, like all of them get shown at AMC. And so we're going through all the trailers, and I'm getting ready to run if the Last Jedi trailer comes out, because I've run out of that theater before for Star Wars trailers.
You are a maniac.
So I had like the runner's position going on the seat in case, yep, I needed to bolt. Luckily, it never happened because I forgot it wasn't actually a Disney movie. So we get to the last trailer. And so, oh, I should note, this is a theater showing it in 3D and standard D, and of course I chose standard D because that's the preferred viewing for me. And right, so I'm sitting there, and after the last trailer, the sign for real D 3D comes up and says, "Please put on your glasses." And we all looked at each other.
Oh, weird.
In the theater, we were like, "What is going on?" And then they showed a Black Panther trailer in 3D, and we were all like, "What? Well, huh. What's happening?" And so someone went out and told someone, and it shut down because, you know, the days of we're old, as people who listen to the show know. We like to talk about. We'll get to the movie in a second. This is like the WTF podcast.
Yeah,
we're old, and when we were kids, there was somebody at the goddamn projector booth who would monitor to make sure everything was going right. And
exactly, I had the same thought when my thing happened.
Because at the same theater when I went to see Doctor Strange, actually, the slowly the colors started going bad to the point where they all got inverted. But we sat and watched an entire trailer first because I was just amused. I was like, "Is anyone going to notice this?" And as an entire trailer went through like that, I went up and got them to fix it. But it took forever because no one's in the theater monitoring if anything's happening. This isn't your high end theater like the ArcLight or whatever. So we went out. They turned it off, and we literally sat there for 20 minutes. And already we sat through 20 minutes of trailers because it's AMC. And I'm like, "Well, now I'm adding an hour to this experience."
Oh man!
And finally, it came on, but it was just like the quick in and out I was hoping for, because I had to go back to the office to do something. I got pinged as I was sitting there that something had gone haywire. I had to go fix, so I had to end up back at the office until late because I ran out early. But because it went wrong, and I knew yours got screwed up before I left, so I was like, "Wow, this movie's cursed."
Yeah, I don't know what it was. Maybe because the heat, July, the holiday, who knows? But listen, we earned this movie. That's what I'm saying. And luckily. Spider-Man Homecoming is delightful, and it made all of the annoying stuff around it pay off because the movie was well worth it.
Yeah, I think the big takeaway from this is that it's fun.
It was great.
And long time,
I have one major complaint, but we can get to that.
Yeah, and they're it's not the perfect film by any means, but I think what's interesting to note is that it is the third Spider-Man reboot since 2001. So this is
our third. Our third reboot, our third Spider-Man now with Tom Holland following in the footsteps of Andrew Garfield and Tobey Maguire.
And long time listeners will know, I wasn't a big fan of the Raimi films. I liked the second one a lot, but I didn't like the first one and I hated the third one. The Garfield films were not good films, but he was good. I liked him, and I liked Emma Stone, obviously, in
everything. The greatest moment in the two Garfield films was that shot of Spider-Man with the fireman hat putting out with the fireman. Yes. Like that was the high point of those Garfield films. I like Andrew Garfield a lot. I liked him as Spider-Man, but those movies were not good. I was actually thinking about this on the subway ride back this morning, which was very slow going again. Damn weekend track work. there's been a lot of talk recently, and we're channeling Marin here and not talking about what we're actually talking about, but there's been a lot of talk about the producer-driven movie era that we seem to have entered in. And, you know, recently with the Han Solo director firing and we've talked a lot about how these Marvel movies are no longer really director-driven, that they're getting good directors who can execute on the producer's vision, right? And I was thinking about it, and I was like, because I agree with you. I didn't love the Raimi movies. I mean, there was the initial, which Josh loves. If he was here, he'd groan at this. But like, I can't believe we have a Spider-Man movie. Yeah. You know, like that shock that happened to it. But as the years have gone on, I've wondered if the thing that made us complain about these superhero movies is that you have someone like a Sam Raimi, or I don't even know who directed. Oh, no, it was the 500 Days of Summer guy. Mark Webb, yeah. Come in, and they try to do their take on it or their vision, and in this case, like, you had Kevin Feige very involved in this production, and, you know, a young, new, hungry director who probably I imagine injected a lot of his own personality into it, but like executed on the Marvel vision for a Spider-Man movie. And if you ask me, this is the best Spider-Man movie of all six movies.
Oh yeah, by far. Yeah. And it's the best Spider-Man. It's the best Spider-Man, yes. The best Spider-Man movie. But the producer-driven thing is, I think it's only really true for Marvel and Star Wars. I mean, the other studios want those. They don't have those things yet. I mean, movies are still a director-driven medium, and that.
Right. Sure. Overall, but I think in these mega corporate library
shared universe,
characters,
that's absolutely true, 100%. Anyway. I think this is the best Spider-Man. We talked about during the Civil War show that Tom Holland, they're both British, was a great Spider-Man. And he's a great Spider-Man. I mean, that's the bottom line. I think this is the first time they really captured Peter Parker properly. You know, the science nerd in school, even if we'll get to some of the weirdness at the school. But he's a delight. He's the right size and shape. Spider-Man should be small, and he should be young. Makes him the most interesting. And when he's bouncing around off of the Avengers, as we saw in Civil War, and when he's hanging out with Tony Stark here, he should be in contrast. He shouldn't be like every other hero in the room. And that's physically, he looks different, which is nice.
Yeah, no, I mean, they got two things very, very right about this movie, is that it definitely is a kid's movie. I mean, it definitely is a truly high school. We never really believed Tobey Maguire was in high school, right?
No.
And I think they put him
like
in college.
30.
I think they put him in college very quickly, like in the second or third movie, right? So,
well, he was out of high school in the first movie.
Yeah, yeah. So they got that right. And then also, it took place mainly in Queens.
Yeah.
Right, which is so true to the Spider-Man, you know, kind of mythos. And, you know, like that's the kind of thing. I'm thinking back to the Tobey Maguire and the and Andrew Garfield movies. You had the Flatiron Building, you had Times Square, like all these New York City kind of icons. But like reality, Spider-Man for all these years and stuff like that, he lived in Forest Hills. He like, you know, like all that stuff.
He lived there, but he would go to Manhattan.
Yeah, true. No, but it's great to see a Spider-Man in his roots,
yes,
kind of in that, you know, and have fun with it. I mean, like, I would have watched an entire movie of him being friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, but like, I wish there was more of that. You know, seeing him riding the Seven on top of the Seven, or like sitting on the balcony overlooking the Seven line right by Woodside. Like, it was great. They definitely got what makes Spider-Man work. The Ramones, there were multiple Ramones songs.
Yeah.
That works a lot. That worked a lot for me. So
the general plot is that, first of all, I love the opening, which we get the iPhone movie of his life leading up to and enduring Civil War, and immediately after Civil War. I thought that was a genius move. I thought it was really
well. And even before that, we got 8 years ago, where we see basically the villain. We see Michael Keaton's origin.
That's
of
right.
you know a guy who runs a salvage crew cleaning up the mess after the first Avengers movie, and then Damage Control comes in and takes the job away from him, which builds his hatred for heroes and the government and all that sort of stuff, and then kind of sets his villainous path in motion as becoming an arms dealer. Did not expect to see Tyne Daly in this movie.
Well,
that was I was like, oh, there's Cagney or Lacey. I don't remember. Tyne Daly, good to see you again. Didn't know you were still alive.
First of all, I had a minor existential crisis. So I was like, was it 8 years ago? Was Avengers 8 years
ago?
Was it 8 years ago?
Yeah, no, it was
2009?
2008. 2009, I think. Let me see. And there was also later in the movie when Happy said to Tony that he's been holding onto that ring since 2008. I was like, oh, that's a long time. Oh, no, the Avengers movie was 2012.
Yeah, that's why I was confused.
Oh, that's interesting.
So these movies take place in the future?
In the future? Wow.
Yeah, I was like, it can't be 8 years ago. I can't. That can't have happened. I don't. Yeah. But we have Adrian Toomes, the Vulture, is the main villain played by is he goddamn American Treasure, Michael Keaton?
It's real close. I know he's an American Treasure. I don't know if he's a goddamn American Treasure because there was some shakiness, although I think Multiplicity makes him deserve to become a goddamn American Treasure. But he's real close. He's at least an American Treasure. And he continues that in this movie, if you ask me. I thought Michael Keaton was fantastic.
Yeah, what was interesting though is if you know the, I'm going to say, quote, rumors to protect us of the behind-the-scenes stuff at Marvel. It's interesting how S.H.I.E.L.D. has been completely obliterated from these movies, and now that Damage Control has taken their spot, and also the FBI. So there's a point in the movie where there's an FBI raid on Toomes and his crew, and I'm like, well, this would have been S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, 10 years ago. But all the politics of Marvel prevented that from happening. But so Damage Control is introduced as a shadowy, as the Department of Damage Control, not the traditional comics version of Damage Control. And they do the cleanup, and they, in reality, they would have paid off his contract and sent him on his way.
That was my thought, too, that they would have reimbursed him and said, you're done, and pay, but you got to have motivation. That's right. Fine. There were a couple of moments where I needed to forget about reality in this movie, which is fine.
Yep. So he and his crew managed to get away with one crate full of alien technology, and they use that to start a arms business in which they have been creating super-powered weapons for people undercover for years. And but in addition to Adrian Toomes, you had the Shocker, or you had two versions of the Shocker. You had the Tinkerer and and his crew. And nice little cameo from the Prowler, played by Donald Glover. And what was interesting about that was the Prowler is the uncle of Miles Morales.
Yeah,
and he mentions in the movie that he's got a nephew in the neighborhood, and you know everybody wanted Donald Glover to play Miles Morales. He's 15 years too old to do that, but I thought it was a nice little subtle nod to Miles Morales being in the neighborhood with the Prowler showing up.
Yeah, that was really great. And also we saw Mac Gargan,
right.
Who will go on in the end credit, in the mid credit tease, assuming, you know, the villain for the next movie. But he was the Scorpion, and he has a scorpion tattoo. So I thought they did a really good job of weaving in the villains and names and things like that from the movie, from the comics into the movie. This is very much a blend of, we said how a lot of the Raimi movie and even the Garfield movie was like, okay, this is really Ultimate Spider-Man, not actually right. Spider-Man. This was kind of like a blender of old school Spider-Man mixed with a little Ultimate Spider-Man mixed with Miles Morales. So much so that Bendis and Pacelli got thanked at the end of the movie, and Bagley did not. well, I did notice that at various scenes in Queens, if you look at any of the spray paint, there were names of artists, and one of them was Bagley. That was a nice little nod. Yeah. So.
Well, I mean, they got thanked specifically because even though the character's name is Ned Leeds.
Who was
Peter Parker's comic book best friend, and he's Genki.
He's Genki, and that really makes me wonder why, because Peter's love interest in this movie is Liz Allen. I'm pretty sure in the comics Ned and Liz end up together, right?
Well, here's the thing. That's the twist. That's one of the two twists we should talk about. So anyway, this whole movie's about Peter Parker stopping the Vulture, his nefarious plans, and actually. What was interesting was it was very much a traditional Spider-Man arc in that he had to learn power and responsibility, but they never actually said those words, and Uncle Ben's never mentioned. So they still told the traditional Spider-Man story in which he is arrogant, but he has to learn to not be arrogant and to be a better man and a better hero. They just didn't hammer us with the power responsibility mantra.
Right. And we didn't get a origin again.
Right.
There's when Ned/Genki finds out that Peter's Spider-Man, he just says, he's like, you got bit by a spider, and like that's it.
Yeah.
You know, which is great, which is a good decision. And a lot of this was basically power and responsibility, but they never said that, and you never get any Uncle Ben reference or anything like that. And actually, it's a really good growth exercise with Tony Stark as the mentor, and you know, and and you know, the rough arc that Peter goes through throughout the whole movie. I thought they handled that, the kind of maturity question, really well.
Yeah, so there's a lot of Robert Downey Jr. as Tony Stark, who is Peter's science bro mentor, and who shows up throughout the film. And you know, it's a, you know, all Peter wants to be is an Avenger. People keep asking, Spider-Man an Avenger? And he gets that chance at the very end to join the Avengers, drop out of high school and join the Avengers, and he chooses to go back to school, and that was nice. And then the little twist of that, he actually was inviting him to the Avengers, as it wasn't a test, was nice. But
you see, that was very funny. So the very, very end of the movie, when he goes up to Avengers, you know, ranch, in upstate New York, and basically Tony, Tim and Tony make up, and Tony wants to give him the Iron Spider costume and introduce him as a member of the Avengers, and Peter turns it down and thinking it's a test, but turns out there really is a press conference. But then we get Gwyneth Paltrow, and we see that Gwyneth Paltrow and Tony are back together, and like that whole interplay between Robert Downey Jr., Gwyneth Paltrow, and Jon Favreau is happy. Yeah. Well, I was like, oh, I'd like another Iron Man movie.
Yes. Well, there's two twists in the film. One is that Pepper Potts shows up at the very end. I was genuinely surprised because, again, I don't read anything about these movies. I tried not to read anything about these movies. When she walked in, I literally went, oh, because we haven't seen her since Iron Man 3. She wasn't in Avengers. She wasn't in any of the subsequent Avengers films. So it was nice to see her there. She's a great mix of these characters. She's a great chemistry with Robert Downey Jr. But the other twist, and you mentioned Liz, was that so Peter's in love with Liz, who's his classmate at you know, it's not Midtown High, it's whatever science school it is in Midtown.
Yeah, it's Midtown School of Technology or whatever it is. Yeah, so
he's in love with Liz, who's a senior. He's a sophomore. They bond over being
it's
in the
Midtown School of Science and Technology.
Okay, and they bond over being on the math decathlete, science decathlete, whatever team, the brainy Olympic team. And ends up taking her to the homecoming dance, and this is the first twist where I literally was shocked, was where the door opens when he goes to pick her up, and her dad is Michael Keaton, Adrian Toomes, and I was like, wait a minute. But then the thing I thought about it, they never said her last name, and so we're supposed to assume she's Liz Allen because it's Liz in the high school. However, they never said her last name, so clearly she's Liz Toomes. She's not Liz. It's Liz Allen.
I thought they said her last name at some point.
I don't think they ever did. Looking at the credits, she's only listed as Liz.
Oh, interesting. So we all jumped to the conclusion.
They played with our foreknowledge of the character names and made her. And they do the same thing with Michelle.
You're right. I'm looking on IMDb. Yeah, her name is Liz. Yeah, it doesn't say Liz Allen. Yeah.
So they played with us there. They made us think, Liz Allen clearly, and then it wasn't her. But that was actually a really great twist.
And then the big twist at the end where there's the, you know, kind of the lonely girl, Michelle, who is kind of on the outskirts of everything going on at school. And then at the very end of the movie, we find out that she prefers to be referred to as MJ. So
we have a little bit of playing with the characters. She's not Mary Jane. She's Michelle, but she's also MJ. So that's okay. I think it's okay. In this particular world they've created, which is interesting because you'd think that the Marvel version of these characters would be more pure to the characters. But anyway, it doesn't matter. I liked all the school stuff, even though the Flash character, played by Tony Revolori, who was really great, who was great in the Grand Budapest Hotel, and it was great in that movie we loved. What was that movie we loved?
Which
one? The hip-hop movie.
Oh, Dope. He was in Dope. Yeah.
He's great playing Flash, however, not a convincing bully.
No, not at all. Because he's also like on the decathlon. The problem is that they're at a school for gifted students. So how do you make Flash dumb? You can't. So they just made him a bully nerd, which is fine, I guess.
It's funny because I didn't go to a school for gifted students, but I went to a smart New York City public high school in Queens.
Yeah.
And we had jocks.
Yeah, I mean,
jocks are smart too. Like, guys that are good at sports can be smart too. So I was like, well, I guess he's just an asshole, not so much a bully. But that was the only one I was having a hard time wrapping my head around was the fact that the bully was weighed 100 pounds soaking wet. But
but it was funny. I mean,
he was funny. Yeah. And he was great. But the high school stuff was all fun. You know, they were very influenced. It was very sort of 80s high school influence. They apparently watched all the John Hughes movies in preparation. Like, he made the cast sit down and watch them all. The director who should mention is John Watts.
Yeah, and the script is written by John Francis Daly. from right. which is our very interesting. Did he co-write it or what? I think he's a partner.
He co-wrote it with Jonathan Goldstein, who's his writing partner. But there was three script versions, so there was three writing teams. But eventually, they wrote
right. But the connection. So John Francis Daly was Sam in Freaks and Geeks, and we also have Martin Starr, who was in Freaks and Geeks, playing Peter's teacher and the decathlon team teacher, you know, guiding teacher. So many Freaks and Geeks connections to this movie as well too, which is great.
I'm just happy whenever Martin Starr shows up in anything now.
And he was great in this. He was like I've gotten so used to Martin Starr, Silicon Valley, like that kind of persona. To see him as a science teacher was very funny, and he did great. So,
did you catch that Principal Morita, the principal of school, was the grandson of the Morita character from Captain America?
Yeah, well, he's one of the Howling Commandos, and actually, when Peter's in his office, you see there's a bunch of awards, and there's a black and white picture of him in his office as well too. That was neat to see. We mentioned the Shockers in it. It was neat to see that whoever had the Shocker gauntlet had the yellow sleeve jacket with that was a nice little nod to the character's costume. Of course, we had Stan Lee, right? We got a little Stan Lee cameo, which is good. The other thing also was that there was a bunch of little references to the scientists of the movie throughout. Like at one point, when Peter's in science class, there are pictures of famous scientists and things like that. And at one point, I saw John Slattery as Howard Stark. And I also saw there's a black and white picture of Bruce Banner.
And Stanley Tucci was also in there too. It was just really fun. The adventures of Peter and Queens were fun. That whole montage where Stanley was there, where he was fighting crime that day, and things were going right, things were also going wrong. I loved him giving the woman directions. Like that whole montage of him, you know. Tony tells Peter to stay on the ground and be the hero on the ground. So there's a whole great montage of him doing that. Sometimes he stops a crime, sometimes he's helping a lady cross the street, sometimes he's stopping a guy from opening his own car. Like that was a fun sequence. And then he goes to DC with the decathletes where the little piece of technology they scavenged from one of the fights with the Vulture actually blows up the Washington Monument and endangering his fellow students, and that was a great sequence of him saving them. I don't love all the technology in the spider suit. That's just my personal Spider-Man thing.
I was going to ask about that. So he, you know, it's the same spider suit from Civil War, and there's a lot of him using it. Then at one point he hacks it and finds out that Tony has put in Trini Wheels protocol. And so he undoes that, and that unlocks a Jarvis-like AI, which actually, do you know who did the voice of the
Jennifer,
AI?
Jennifer Connelly.
Jennifer Connelly, who's married to Paul Bettany, who was the voice of Jarvis, which then became the Vision. Well, it's all connected. But just lots of technology in that suit, and that's just a little away from the Spider-Man mythos, but it's also modern, so I allowed it.
It's not totally away, but the thing was, I think we all have our Spider-Man. My Spider-Man is the guy whose suit's always just barely working.
Yep.
Because he's poor, right? That's the whole thing. And so if he's got a super, that's why at the very end when they showed him the spider suit, Iron Spider suit. I thought he was going to take it, and I thought, oh no. But
no, that's why that moment when I saw that suit, I'm like, oh, he's not going to take it.
Right.
And thankfully, I was right. He did not. So that was good.
I like Spider-Man who's on the knife's edge. Now, I guess that's what worked about the Raimi films.
Yeah.
I thought that as a 15-year-old boy, if you had Jennifer Connelly whispering in your ear like that all the time, you would not get a lot done.
Like when he saved Liz and he's hanging upside down and they're both looking at each other, and then Jennifer Connelly in his voice is going, "Now's your chance, Peter, kiss her." It's like it was a little like whispery there. That was like,
I would be happy but if it was you. I was like, wow, you should not be telling that to a 15-year-old boy in that breathy whispery.
Exactly. But it was nice to have somebody for him to talk to. I thought the scene where he's trapped in the damage control vault was really funny.
Yeah.
You know, like where he was alone and he's talking to, you know, he names her Karen. He was talking to that and learning about how to use the suit and all stuff like that. That was fun. There was only 37 minutes had gone by, which is very funny. I thought that we talked a little about Keaton being great, but the big kind of fight at the end kicks off with Keaton bringing the roof down of a warehouse down on Peter, and we get, you know, I was like, oh, they're doing Spider-Man 33.
Right.
Like, you know, like there was water, it was dripping, and he had to lift himself up. And like, while they never got the exact shot exactly, like it wasn't a if Zack Snyder was doing it, you know, the shot we would have gotten. Right. Which right. I'm glad they did, because but it was still reminiscent enough of that to get it.
Well, I actually really love that, because in that moment, Peter Parker was a character that we haven't seen in these movies. He was crying.
Yeah.
He was scared. And he was vulnerable in a way that we haven't really seen from any of these heroes, because he's a kid and he was trapped in the rubble and he thought he was going to die. And I thought it was very, in that sense, I don't want to say disturbing, but shocking, because he was so vulnerable in that moment. I thought that was a really, actually really great scene. One of my favorite scenes of the whole movie.
We touched on it a little, but I think Keaton as the villain and the whole plot line and the combination of Stark telling, you know, Spider-Man or Peter to be on the ground and him uncovering this kind of arms dealing going on and being on his own was, you know, really up the stakes. And then the scene where Peter takes Liz to the homecoming dance, which is the titular moment of the movie, which I feel so stupid now to just realize. But anyway, it's the reveal that Adrian Toomes was Liz's father. Was not only like I think I gasped out loud. I was like, oh,
yeah.
And then that car drive, and
so
as they're talking, and Michael Keaton putting the pieces together, and then figuring it out, and then threatening Peter, like that was really tense and really good. Like Keaton, that was
Keaton was so good in this, and I'm enjoying the little Keaton renaissance. I just watched The Founder the other day, so I had a lot of Keaton going on in my brain. But he's so good in this, and he's a very effective actor. He does his Keaton stuff, but it's so good, and he plays this character so well. He's full of rage and he's full of indignation for his place in the world and what these people have done to him, but he's also full of pride for what he's built in the shadows. And I actually liked the Vulture costume. It had the nods to the original with his little furry collar, but you know, it made sense in the world, and it was intimidating, and it made sense for what he was doing. He used the feet claws to pick up big boxes when they would go on heists, and I thought it was fun. I thought that their fight was good. I think, you know, Peter's interesting when his villain isn't also just really strong, but also really smart, because then it's a real challenge for him.
And that's why, I think one of the great things is that it plays up Peter's intelligence and Peter's, you know, science smarts and all stuff like that. And even like, so the big, you know, kind of action piece where the arms deal on the Staten Island Ferry goes wrong, and Peter ends up accidentally, you know, triggering one of the weapons that splits the ferry in half. And he's trying, you know, he's using the suit, but also trying to figure out Peter knows, okay, where are the points of strength in the ship, and how can I weave together the webs to keep it together? Like that was a really great action piece that played not only on Peter's powers, the suit, but also his knowledge to do that. You know,
and his Spider-Man-ness in that he didn't do it exactly right, so the boat was still going to collapse until Iron Man showed up. And then that was a great scene with him and Tony. I thought that was a really great. This is a really great cast, and all the big sort of head-to-head scenes. Keaton and Holland, Downey and Holland, were really good, and because they're really good actors.
That's my only complaint about the entire movie, which is you have an American treasure like Marissa Tomei.
I was going to build that.
Marissa Tomei sitting there. An Oscar winner, goddamn Oscar winner, and you already have the joke of everybody hitting on her and thinking that she, you know, like the bodega guy in Spanish saying, oh, his aunt's a hot Italian woman and all this sort of stuff, and you barely use her. Like, literally, I can count on one hand the scene she's in. More Tomei. I wanted more Aunt May. God damn it.
But she got the great stinger joke.
She did, yeah. The last line in the movie is hers, which was great, yeah. But
at first I was like, so is Peter Italian now? But then I realized, you know, in New York, Irish guys marrying Italian girls is very
common. Yeah. We don't know who's, I forget who Aunt May is the sister of.
I don't know. But I mean, clearly Richard, Ben has, well, anyway, it doesn't make, it's not important. He's not her mother. He's not the mother, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, but, she's not his mother. Thank God.
what was interesting, though, is that I had a couple sitting next to me. A young couple who really enjoyed the movie, because I was listening to them talk as we were waiting for the credits, you know, scenes to happen. And they still thought this was a continuation of the other Spider-Man movies.
Oh, man.
And, you know, it's not their fault. I mean, it kind of is, but there's been a lot of Spider-Man movies, so it's a little confusing. That is the one thing working against them in all this stuff, is that is all these different Spider-Man situations. But I think this is a terrific time in the movies. Spider-Man, I don't know what the visceral thing about him is, but it's something. There's something visceral about seeing Spider-Man swinging through New York. And I'm glad they really got it right. The suit's fantastic. We talked about it before, but the Romita-inspired suit with the eyes. I love the gag where his bag's constantly getting stolen whenever he webs it to the wall.
Yeah.
You think he'd hide it better. But
Richard Parker is Peter's father. Right. His brother is Benjamin Parker, who married May Riley.
Right.
So, and in this case, she's May Tomei, and that's fine with me.
So the other running gag we haven't talked about is the constant educational videos from Captain America, which I thought were hysterical.
Yes, including the very end of the credits.
So let's talk about that, because that was a point of contention in my theater. So the mid-credit sequence, it was kind of a throwaway. It was
a teaser for the next movie.
Yeah, Adrian Toomes running into Scorpion in prison. And which, first of all, I'm glad they didn't kill Keaton, which means we can get more Keaton in future films. Yeah. And we'd seen Scorpion earlier in the film, but so clearly we've got the seeds now for the Sinister Six. But then the end credits sequence was Captain America showing up to record another of his educational films. This one was about the virtue of patience, and it was very heavy-handed about disappointment.
It picks up on the gag throughout the movie. Is like when they're in gym class, they're doing the Captain America physical fitness challenge. Yeah. And then when Peter finds himself in detention, it's rolling a video. It's like, I'm Captain America. You're in detention. Like, what did you do wrong? And like all this stuff. So the fact that the end credit was Captain America with a message about patience. And then it just, he's like, you might be wondering, why am I sitting here? You know,
it's just many in my theater were not happy with that joke. I loved it. Really? I thought it was hysterical. I you know, as much as I hate the term, it was them trolling the audience, but many in my theater were annoyed that they sat through it, and I thought it was great. But I thought the whole gag was great. In the gym class video, he says, and your gym teacher, and he gestures to the right, but the teacher's standing to the left of the TV. Like those little details were really funny.
Yeah, the gym teacher played by Hannibal Buress, he was funny as well too.
I will say this, as someone who went to a New York City public high school, it was very accurate in many ways.
I mean, all in all, I'm hard pressed to find any complaints about this movie other than the lack of Marissa Tomei. For a moment, I was teetering, like in the last final fight, which involves Adrian Toomes trying to steal a plane full of stuff from Avengers Tower, and Peter tagging along in a fight on the plane, and the jet gets knocked off, like the engine gets knocked off, and I was like, Peter would be dead 19 times over in the scene in real life. But you remember, this is a superhero movie and it's fun, and throw that to the, you know, like just throw that to the wind. And, you know, having it, you know, Peter saves it and has it land on the beach in front of Coney Island again, very New York and very, you know, like it all worked. I mean, and even, and like the little touches by having like the self-indulgent Marvel logo sequence, you know, being to the tune of the Spider-Man song was nice. And then I love the end credits, you know, which you got the Ramones Blitzkrieg Bop, and then these great kind of pop art.
The end credits were fantastic.
End credits were great. Were really, really good. But, they did it right. It took six movies. They finally got it right.
See, you were thinking about him dying in that sequence. I was wondering why the plane was flying south from Manhattan when it was going north upstate New York to end up in Brooklyn.
Good point, yeah.
But I was like, wow, where's this beach it's landing? Is it some beach in New Jersey? Because it didn't make any sense. Anyway. Not important.
Well, I will say that, but what did make sense was that the fact that it took place in Queens and all stuff like that. I mean, the bodega that got ruined was on 21st Street, right? And I'm on 21st Street all the time. At one point, when Peter was chasing the Vulture, he was literally, and they called out, literally on the street I live on, right? And like, and he ended up in Brooklyn. I was like, oh yeah, that's how he would go. Like, they got the geography right for the most part.
That deli scene made me want a New York City deli sandwich real bad.
Yeah. Although I was gonna say, no bodega is that friendly.
No, that's not true. I when I lived in Brooklyn, I was there for 12 years, and I was very good buddies with my bodega guy. He would.
Okay, maybe.
He had one of my spare keys, for God's sakes.
True. I remember that. I've only got a year in Queens. I guess got to build up the relationship.
Well, I went every single day to that bodega. So you need that kind of commitment to become bodega friends. But
the only relationship I have is the woman at Dunkin' Donuts who knows me and hates me. So.
Oh, geez. So I think this is great. I think Tom Holland's a wonderful Spider-Man. He's the best Spider-Man yet. I think the universe is the most interesting. You're right. This is my favorite Spider-Man movie by far.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I would say that this is the best Spider-Man movie of all of them. And again, we always talk about this, and I try to avoid the new shiny, like the latest movie being the best one ever or stuff like that. But after I would like to see this again, but after the one viewing, this is definitely in top five of all Marvel movies as far as I'm concerned.
Well,
like I think it's really strong.
I was thinking about it because we had talked in a previous show about how we weren't super psyched for it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we have been doing this for a long time now. It has been since 2008. There are a lot of these movies. They come out like clockwork. And we're at the point now where in Captain America territory, in that when Ed Brubaker was writing Captain America, we were running out of good things to say, and it was becoming sort of routine that it was so good. It wasn't taking away the fact that the books were good. It was like, what more is there to say about these things? What you have to now do is do something different. What they do here is the teenage superhero movie. So that's different. Yep. That's not the same as the other movies. That's why this works so well. That's why it works so well that he's so young, because when you see him in Avengers Infinity War and he's bouncing around fighting Thanos, it's going to be weird.
It's going to make sense.
He's going to be different. He's not going to be, you know, ultimately all these sort of 30s to 40 year old superheroes are not that different. But he is 15, so he's different and therefore interesting.
That reminds me, though, because I heard going into this, I heard a lot of people, especially a lot of the reviews coming out, saying this is like, oh, this is Marvel meets John Hughes and all that sort of stuff. And which I don't know. I mean, I don't know. There's a lot of high school stuff, but John Hughes is a very high bar to give it to. I will give them credit that when there's the sequence where Peter goes to the party at Liz's house, which is in the quote unquote suburbs, which I guess is like in Douglaston or like somewhere. Like if she goes to school in the city, it's not that far in the suburbs. But anyway,
well, they could be living on Long Island, but it also could be like right at the border, Queens border.
Yeah, that's why I'm thinking like Douglaston, like right that the Queens Nassau border. Yeah. But so there's a whole scene of Spider-Man chasing these arms guys through the suburbs, and he's running through backyards, and the moment I was like, this is like Ferris Bueller. He runs through a backyard and they're in the living room watching Ferris Bueller, where Ferris is running through the backyard. And I was like, oh, that's a little on the nose.
Yeah, they didn't need that. The joke was pretty obvious without it. We'll have to call it out.
But maybe, I mean, I don't know if everybody is as steeped and also, you know, there's a whole nother generation who probably doesn't even know about the movie. So
I don't, I can't.
Oh, we're so old.
But it's fun. It's super fun. I don't want to. It's a great time at the movies. Holland's great. Spider-Man's in good hands. Really looking forward to seeing him in the Avengers mix, because even though he didn't join the Avengers at the end, he's clearly going to be back with them. You know, when they all come together for Infinity War. So I'm excited. You know, we were kind of leery about these lower tier characters. Not that Spider-Man's lower tier, but like your Doctor Stranges, your Black Panthers, but your Ant-Mans. But they are bringing interesting things to the table. You know, I didn't love the Doctor Strange movie, but the character's interesting. So when he comes into the group, he will be interesting. I'm really looking forward to Black Panther, because the director's fantastic and the cast is fantastic, and the character's good.
That trailer just looks like bananas good. Yeah. Like it's just like, it's like whole, like this is a whole other world. Is that Wakanda should be? And so yeah, like I think that's going to be, the Black Panther is going to be like really good, I think.
So, you know, this is I think we're in an interesting time for these movies right now. The next one we have coming up is Thor, November.
Yep.
And
it almost feels like a next generation moment, you know, where I feel like we had that first wave, right? And then we had a rocky transition. Mm-hmm. And I feel like, you know, we heard all the phase two, phase three, all whatever. I feel like we've definitely it definitely seems as if they've shaken off the growing pains or the after effects of Avengers 2. And they've added some new pieces to the board, and like I'm really excited for Thor Ragnarok. I think I was just talking about this last night to a friend of mine.
I love the Thor movies.
I think that's gonna be great. And you know, they're filming, although apparently Renner broke both of his arms on the set of Avengers Infinity War. But you know, they're filming Infinity War now, and that's finally gonna pay off on what those seeds that have been laid out like nearly 10 years ago at this point.
Well, part 20 of a 20-part story is what they're saying. Like this is the finale of the 20-part story they've been telling. It's exciting. I'm still excited by all these, and I'm looking forward to seeing them all come together. Thor. I love the Thor films. A lot of people don't, but the director is also really interesting. He's made some good films that I've seen. So, I'm excited for that. That's our next big Marvel release. We have Well, before that, we have in August, we have the Defenders happens, so we have to get ready for that.
Yeah.
And then after that, in October, we have the Kingsman sequel. November 3rd is Thor, Ragnarok, Justice League, and November 17th, and then Star Wars. I think that's the schedule for the rest of the year in terms of these special edition shows.
All right. I'm excited. Well, this is a good midsummer movie moment.
Do you want to do ratings?
Ratings.
I'm gonna give it a 4.
I'm gonna give it a 4.5. The only thing missing it from getting me a full 5 stars would be more Tomei.
I could make a t-shirt for you that says more Tomei.
More Tomei. I mean, she's a goddamn Oscar winner. She's sitting right there. She's adorable.
She is. She hasn't lost.
And she's not only is she fantastic, but she's she steals it when she's on screen. Like, she's great. She's an amazing actress.
Marissa Tomei has it. Whatever she has it exactly. Is, she has it. She is.
Sure, the Italian helps, but sure. I'm just saying.
She hasn't lost a mile after fastball, is what we're saying. She still looks great. So you can go to iFanboy.com. You can find a post for the show. You can talk about Spider-Man. Tell us what you thought. You can also find all of our old special edition shows. We did Wonder Woman just about a month ago. You can find that show back there. And we have August 18th is the Defenders. It's only 8 episodes, so it won't take us quite as long as previous Netflix shows to put the show out, but you can look for that at some point, probably later in August for the next special edition show.
I'm excited for that one. I'm gonna watch that much faster than I did Iron Fist. So.
And that may be a first weekender. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
But until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Ron.
I want a deli sandwich.
So do I. I don't want an iced tea. That's what I want. Aye!